With Laura Fox
podcast.
Now, I need you to have a listen to this very, very quickly. Once I actually get the clip, I thought I'd have this. Brian, don't kill me. Hang on.
The world ain't set up for the honest man to succeed. That should be the American dream right there. You know, beautiful story with a happy ending. But that ain't the way the world works. America's a hustle. Not that I'm complaining.
Now, you might recognise that if you are absolutely bed into the Penguin at the minute, because Colin Farrell is the talk of the telly world with the success of that show. And with Doom Prophecy coming out this weekend, spin-offs are having a bit of a moment. So we've asked Brian Lloyd to pick out his most and least favourite. Brian, you're very welcome back to the show. How are
you? Hey, how are you?
Sorry, I didn't have any of that ready because myself and yourself were
yapping away.
We're talking about Gladiator 2. We're not going to discuss that right now in a second. Because we are talking about spin-off shows, right?
Yeah.
The Penguin is a spin-off show from 2022's The Batman. Mm-hmm. And why do you think that this has worked when so many others haven't?
The Penguin specifically, yeah. I think a lot of it is just actually due to Colin Farrell. The fact that, you know, the performance that he gave in the film was really unlike anything I'd seen and him doing a long, long time. Like, he looked completely unrecognizable.
I think that was the thing.
Yeah.
That was like, for me anyway, I was kind of going, I actually can't believe you're Colin Farrell.
Yeah, he looked like he just looked totally unrecognisable. And like the accent and even just the way he kind of carried himself, like you could tell that he'd done a lot of work with it. And like you go back and read or, you know, look at some of the interviews that he's done. He talks about the fact that like once he started playing this character, he got really greedy. He was like, no, I want to make something else.
Yeah.
I want to keep playing this character. And it very often happens with a lot of spin-offs that it's literally a case of, yeah, the show or the movie did well, so we're going to do a TV show on it. And no one's really kind of invested in it. Whereas with this, you can tell that he actually was invested in it. He really did want to keep playing this character. And there was a story to tell as well. You know, that sort of way. It's all really about, you know, how this character will just go to any lengths to get what he wants, and that ultimately, in the end, he will get everything he wants and he'll absolutely hate himself for it, and he will just be this. It's really dark. Like, I mean, I don't know if you've been watching it. Like, it's really full on. Like, it's really, really, really dark. And I was not prepared for it. I mean, I remember seeing it like 2 months ago when I got the screeners of it. And I was talking to Fionnuala Jones, actually.
Yeah.
The two of us were doing a thing, and I was like, I said, have you watched The Penguin? She goes, yeah. And she was like, It's just like leaned in. She goes, it's a lot. I was like, and two was like, yeah, it is, right? It's like we've nobody to talk to about it. And now everyone's like, I was talking to my brother about it recently, like the other day, actually. He was all like, yeah, Colin Farrell should just do this all the time. Like, he's so good at it. And I can buy him as this. Like, he's so good at it. But it's so dark. Like, it was so dark. So, yeah.
So this is one of those shows that you do need someone else to speak to about it.
Oh, yeah. You need to properly process it with somebody else. Like, it's one of those shows that you really have to kind of sit and marinate with somebody else and just kind of talk about it.
And go like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, what the hell is going on here? Like, oh my God, he killed that person. Oh my God, what's he doing? Yeah. So.
I mentioned Dune in the opener there, right? That's a bit of a trickier story to tell. Do you think that might be better suited to a TV series 100%. As opposed to a film?
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, because like Dune, I mean, the two films, I mean, what Denis Villeneuve and what the writer of it has done, I think is really, you know, streamline it in such a way that it would fit into a big, huge action blockbuster kind of thing. Because the books, I mean, are, you know, there's like 7 of them and they're really, really dense and they get very, very weird. And, you know, that can work in a book, but trying to translate that into a film is tough, tough work. Whereas with Dune Prophecy, I mean, you know, it's a very technical, it's a very layered, it's a lot of lore. And a TV series is probably the better way to go because it gives you a chance to kind of stretch it out. You've got hours, exactly. Yeah. In the same way that like Game of Thrones would not have worked as a film at all. But, you know, as a TV series, sure, you can kind of layer it. You can lay the groundwork. You can introduce characters. You can introduce the world. You can introduce all the sort of politics of it. And then you can tell your story. Like you have more runway, essentially, to kind of get something going, you know?
Dune, the movies, I couldn't get my head around.
Really?
Yeah, they just didn't appeal to me. So I didn't
think. No, I get that.
Yeah,
I get that.
But I didn't think that the TV show would, because of that. I think sometimes I need to be really invested in a certain character or in what this world is. So if I can watch the TV show and it's explained a little bit better, it might make it a bit easier.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I would say to you, Based on the reviews I've read so far, like, it's, if you found the films weird and off-putting, the TV show is weird and even more off-putting.
Okay,
so,
well,
but give it, a, I mean, give it a shot. By all means, give it a shot. By all means, see how you go.
And let's talk about something that I absolutely adored, and we're talking about, we're going to bring it right back to spin-offs that just worked. Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
Has stood the test of time.
It has, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And what's, I think what's interesting as well is that it's one of the very few examples I can think of where you had a film and most people have not seen the film, yet everyone knows the TV show. Everyone remembers the TV show. Everyone has great memories of it. But yeah, the original film was released in 1992. It was crap.
I didn't even know there was a film.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. Most people don't. Most people don't. And when you watch the TV, or sorry, when you watch the movie rather, it bears kind of like small resemblances to the film or to the TV show, but not really. Like, there's the general kind of vibe of it. It's a little bit funny. It's a little bit campy. There's vampires. It's set in a high school. Donald Sutherland is in it as well. So, like, it has some of the kind of the DNA, but compared to the TV show, like, it's just leaves it for dust.
Yeah.
And whereas the TV show had, you know, heart and humor and, like, these really strong emotional moments. Like, I still think about the scene when Buffy finds the mom dead on the couch. Like, that's so horrible. Like, you'd never imagine that could come from
what the movie was,
which was this really kind of B movie, funny, weird, campy kind of thing. Like, you'd never extrapolate this from that. But considering that Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, went for, you know, had like 24 episodes per season and was running for so long, they had, again, like I was talking about earlier, they had loads of runway to build out this character, build out the supporting cast, build out the world. Yeah.
Let's just talk about Angel.
Angel, right? The hair. I used to have the hair like
you
that.
You still have the hair.
No. But there was a way, there was a way that David Boreanaz did it. You had to like flatten it down with the Dax wax and then you had to like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the little zhoot up the top. I did it. I'm turning 39 this week. I can admit it now. I did have my hair like that. I modeled it on David Boreanaz. And you know what? I cleaned up when I was in school.
I would imagine it worked. Angel was like everybody's kind of first love.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. With the black shirt and like you kind of like it's the second button opened up a little bit and you got to walk around brooding a little bit.
You've done your research. This clearly did well for you.
That's what I'm saying to you. I committed to the bit. Okay? Committed to the bit.
Okay, we need to take the steam down here a little bit. Fargo went to TV nearly 20 years after it actually.
After the film. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and again, and, you know, no one, when the first season launched in, like, in 2014, I don't think anyone would have thought that, you know, this Coen Brothers film, you know, beloved classic, could be turned into a TV show. But what they did really well, I think, is that they just took the general vibe, really, of the film and used that as a sort of a launch pad to tell stories that could conceivably fit into that world. And, you know, the great thing about it is, with Fargo, is that you don't need to have seen the last three seasons of it. You don't need to have seen any season of it. You can literally drop in at the last, at the one just gone with Jon Hamm. Mm. It's fantastic, by the way, if you haven't seen it. It's so, so good. It's on Prime Video now. But you can watch that, and you don't need to have seen the first season or the second season or the third season. It is completely standalone. Each season is essentially like an anthology series.
Okay.
And again, they fit into that world that the idea of sort of morals and what do morals mean in the world and like how far will somebody go for a bit of money, you know, that kind of way. But they're, and again, same vibe, like funny, dark, sinister, brilliant cast, great writing. And yeah, it's one of the best TV shows, I think, of the last, like, you know, 10 years. Like, it's so, so good. Like,
so it's not all one-way traffic, though, because if you think about it, you know, we've spoken there all about, like, movies to TV. Let's flip it on its head and go TV to the silver screen.
Yeah.
Why have you chosen Mission Impossible as your favourite?
Well, okay, first of all, Tom Cruise is the last movie star. He is the last movie star. They're gone now. No one's coming after him. I don't see any of your Timothy Chalamets or your Austin Butlers or even your Paul Mescals. No one is going to touch the cruiser as far as I'm concerned, because he was literally able to take a 60s TV show that had very little appeal to modern audiences, modernize it in such a way that it did have mass appeal. And it's literally, you're watching like seven films and the trailer for the recent one came out. We're literally just watching Tom Cruise try to kill himself in the most inventive way possible. Like, he is jumping out of airplanes, he's diving off trains. It's just every time you're watching, it's like, oh god, he's not gonna make it. And he makes it, and yet we're still there. Like, we're still absolutely invested in it. And it's his commitment to, you know, real stunt work. It's not just CGI. It's not like Fast and Furious where, you know, the cars are CGI, the tires are CGI, Vin Diesel is CGI. No, everything is real. You literally are seeing Tom Cruise hanging off the side of an airplane. You are literally seeing him jumping out of a helicopter onto another helicopter. It's nuts. And it the fact that it's able to build on it so much, I think, is brilliant. Like, it's fantastic. Like, Mission Impossible Fallout was one of the best action movies of the last 10, 20 years.
But like, you think that's the comfort in it as well, like, massively, is that you know exactly what you're getting when you walk in.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, there's no, and like, and that's a good thing. Yeah. That's a really good thing.
That's okay.
That's okay. Like, there is works of art and there are works of craft, and Mission Impossible is a work of craft, and that's okay. And that's and like, you know, like, okay, some people go to the cinema and just look at the screen and like, yep, give me one for Tom Cruise, yeah, and you know what you're getting, and that's great.
Very quickly as well, because obviously we've talked about all of our favourite ones there, just a couple of stinkers. I didn't even know this one existed. Dirty Dancing, the series, was put in the corner after 11
right?
episodes.
Yeah, nice little, yeah, I like that. Appreciate the corner jab. Yeah, so this had 11 episodes. I don't think you can stream this anywhere. I would say the only interesting thing about it is Jan Levinson from The US Office played Baby Houseman in this. I haven't seen it. I've seen clips of it on YouTube and stuff like that. It looks terrible. It looks really, really bad. And, you know, like, I don't even know how you would think Dirty Dancing would work into a TV show, because, like, it's a self-contained story. It's time and a place, and it's Baby becoming a woman. It's about sexuality. Yeah. It's about, you know, the feminine mystique. It's, you know, the female gaze as it relates to Johnny. It's about the dancing. It's about the music. How can you extrapolate that into a TV show? It just doesn't work.
But it's kind of like anything. Like, a summer romance is a summer romance for a reason.
We've all had them. It's one time thing and that's it. Like, okay, if you're going to do a thing where it's like, oh, we go back to Kellerman's every year and each episode is a new romance or something like that, sure. But then it's going to get repetitive. Like,
yeah.
It's one of those things where it's a foolhardy promise. Like,
Ryan Lloyd, as always, thank you so much for coming in today to talk about spin-offs. There are some box sets to try over the winter months there, and then some that didn't even make it to box sets. We'll be right back after these. We have got a very weird experiment for a current battle coming up, and no to the text coming in, I will not say penguin again.
With Laura Fox Podcast.